7. At 7 the following morning, McKendrick's team began to set up an entirely different room for operating.
"We don't know about cyclo-diseases," he told Johnny, "and their cadavers might be very infective to them when decayed. They are built of viruses, and there may be a virus smaller than viruses. So change your clothes and get brand new wires and equipment."
Johnny did, and when he came back, having given Mr. Tsung the problem of digging up another white coat and was laying out new wires, he was astonished to hear McKendrick tell his nurse to go get Chirk.
"She's almost dead," said McKendrick. "Cyclo females have been feeding her for months with a stomach tube. The brain structure is similar and the hole in the jaw is bigger. She's already in a coma, and we won't have to give her much methane. That's the anesthetic that knocks them out."
"I better go get her," said Johnny. He took a mine cart and an air mask and went down to the rooms, which were always circulated with breathe gas. Two cyclo females came over at once when he pushed the cart toward Chirk's bed. There she lay, eyes shut, unmoving. But she was thin, almost skeletal. Poor Chirk. The two hefty females had no trouble at all laying her on the mine cart. Johnny thought he might have been able to do it himself. Her bones almost rattled.
"Give me a breathe gas mask for her," said Johnny.
The two females looked at him blankly.
"Why?"
one said.
"So she can breathe," said Johnny impatiently.
The other female said,
"It won't do any good to try to torture her first. In her state, she won't feel it."
Johnny was trying to wrap his wits around this, and seeing his confusion, the first one explained,
"We have been waiting for someone to come down to kill her. They always do. We wondered and wondered while you waited months."
"That's the only treatment the Catrists ever permitted for Lapsin."
What were these words?
"Well, Catrist was the medical scientist cult that really ran Cyclo. Didn't he know that? And Lapsin was a common disease which child females sometimes got, and although it was rare for one of Chirk's age, she's 30, you know, to get it, it was undeniable that she had Lapsin. And naturally, sooner or later, she had to be killed."
"I'm not going to kill her," said Johnny, indignant. "I'm going to try to cure her."
They didn't believe him. In the first place, it was against the law to cure Lapsin. It was also against the law for an unauthorized person to trifle with the mind. So it followed that he was lying to them just like a Catrist would. But it still wouldn't do any good to try to torture her before she was vaporized, as she wouldn't feel it, and he wouldn't enjoy it. Johnny had to get the breathe mask himself, put it on Chirk, and wheel her through the atmosphere lock. Behind him, the two females were telling each other,
"Torture, I told you so."
Even getting his toe back into the civilization named Cyclo had upset Johnny. But he soon had Chirk in the improvised operating room. Thin as she was, it still took three of them to get her on the table. McKendrick had drilled all this out long ago, and his team was quite efficient. The new doctor lifted the mask enough to slip an expander into the mouth. A nurse slipped a methane tube under the mask edge, and then stood with a stethoscope on Chirk's heart to detect beating changes. The heart evidently slowed down enough to suit her, and she nodded to McKendrick. The jaw holes were outside the mask edge, and McKendrick soon had the wires inserted through the tissue and into the brain. He positioned the head on the view screen very carefully. Johnny regulated the gun trigger for him. The nurse listened carefully to the heart and regulated the methane breathe gas mix. The capsule in her head got less and less. The metal on the plate terminal got more and more. 1 hour and 45 minutes later, McKendrick stood back, the extracted wires in his hands. A trickle of green on each side of the head was staunched by a nurse. The methane tube was taken away. The expander was removed from the mouth. The nurse turned up the breathe gas valve to maximum on the mask vial.
"We tried this on a workman a few months ago without operating," said McKendrick. "It will take her about 4 hours to come out of it, if she does."
Johnny was going to make sure nothing got in the road of her doing just that. He pushed the mine cart and its burden out of the room and back to the lower atmosphere lock. The two Cyclo females were still inside and very surprised to see him. They gave him a hand, putting her back onto the bed. As Johnny was taking off her breathe gas mask, one of the females said,
"I suppose you brought her back here to order us to kill her."
That did it. Johnny kicked them both out. He got a chair and sat down outside the atmosphere lock. He was going to sit there all 4 hours and make very, very sure nobody else got any odd cyclo ideas. At the end of that time, he hoped Chirk would come too. But in any event, he was prepared to wait until she did. 8. Unfortunately for Johnny, it proved to be a rather well-traveled passageway, or people found excuses to travel it just so they could see him there. Chrissy found him.
"I'm awfully sorry we overlooked Patty. I thought you were coming right behind us and had her, and then when I saw she wasn't there, I ran out again, but you had taken off."
Patty was standing behind her, looking at Johnny.
"But that isn't what I must talk to you about," said Chrissy.
She produced from behind her an envelope and began to take things out of it. One glimpse of them told Johnny that Dries had been up to something else. They were the proof sheets, all marked specimen, not valid for exchange, of the new Galactic Bank money. There were 4 coins of different size and 4 bills of different size. The coins were different geometric shapes, well stamped. The paper and printing were excellent. Johnny couldn't imagine what was wrong with them.
"This 11th of a credit coin," said Chrissy, "is not too bad. It's green and you can't see it. The 3/11 coin, this blue one, is not too awful because you can't see it either. This red metal 5/11 coin is barely passing. The yellow 6/11 coin just won't do."
Hearing Chrissy expound upon money was novel. She had probably never used it in her whole life.
"But the smallest to the largest paper bank notes are what you should be concerned about. I told Dries I was very upset. This is the 1-credit note. And this here is what they call the 11-credit note, but it says 10.
"Cyclo number system," said Johnny. "It's based on 11, not 10. 10 means 1 unit of 11s plus 0 units of 1s, which equals 11. So an 11-credit note would be written in numbers as 10.
"I'll take your word for it," sighed Chrissy. "But that's not what I'm mad about. Here, look at these. This one is the 100-credit note. It says 100, but it's the same as 121 1-credit notes. Yes, yes, I know cyclo numbers."
She showed Johnny one more.
"And this one is the 1331-credit note.
Johnny had been looking at them. The coins had larger and larger stamps on them. The banknotes looked startlingly glossy with their shimmer paper. "I'm sorry," he said. "I don't see anything wrong with them."
"It's the face," said Chrissy. "Look. On the coins, they have your face in profile, and you can't see it on the smaller ones, but you can on the yellow one because it's big enough. The nose. Your nose isn't turned up at the end."
Johnny took the coins. Yes, it sure was a turned-up nose.
"And these bills... I don't care," said Chrissy, "if it is hard to reproduce accurately, like Dries says. They made your skin grayish. The eyes have too big a lid. And, Johnny, your ears aren't like that. These look more like gills."
Johnny took the bills. Sure enough, they had changed the portraits. Then he barked a laugh. He still looked enough like himself for no real dispute to rise. But they had shifted it over so he slightly resembled a Salachi. Great. Less chance of being pointed at in the hills. But Johnny had learned a lot about diplomacy. "I'm sorry you don't like them, Chrissy."
"Oh, it's not that. It just doesn't look like you."
"I'm afraid it would cost an awful lot and make a lot of trouble to change them now," said Johnny. "Maybe the next issue." That seemed to mollify her, and she put them back in the envelope and walked off, noting from the way he seemed to have nailed himself down that he might have to be fed lunch there. Patty stayed behind and sat down on the floor. She still seemed very thoughtful, but she was not as dull as she had been. Care came up the ramp, followed by about 30 assorted ex-Marines, Jambit Chows, Drawkins, and a couple of Hockners. Care went on by with a friendly hello. But when the others got abreast of Johnny, they suddenly realized who was sitting there. They recoiled so hard against the far side of the passage that they bounced. They instantly raced up to be in front of Care. Johnny had not missed it. He called out, "Care?" The midget Cyclo walked back to him, leaving his group standing in the passageway. "Care," said Johnny, "what have you been telling those ex-soldiers?"
"Nothing," said Care, amber eyes glowing with innocence back of the faceplate. "They're just kind of hard to handle sometimes."
"Well," said Johnny, "whatever that nothing was, you straighten it out."
"Of course," said Care.
He turned and yelled up at the group,
"It's all right. He isn't mad at you right now."
They all seemed so relieved. Johnny gave Care a very suspicious eye. The midget yelled at the Hockner ex-officer to take them to the garage and get busy washing down machines, and then turned back to Johnny.
"You had me scared there for a moment," he said. "I thought you'd really caught up with me."
"Something else?" said Johnny.
"Ha ha. Well, it wasn't true that he had been the only one here when everybody, including the Mountains of the Moon people, had taken off for Edinburgh to help. They'd left their old ones and their kids.
And he'd gotten bored just sitting with a blast rifle in his lap up the corridor there, and he'd found one of the old ones spoke a funny kind of Dutch.
That's an Earth language, or was.
And Care had found a vocoder in the Chinko bin that had had Dutch in it, so he'd amused himself by telling the old ones stories to relay to the kids that were always hanging around. The children had been pretty shy at first, thinking he was a monster and all, so he'd told them that he was really human, that he had a human mother and father. But his mother had been scared by a cyclo, and so when he was born, he looked this way. But he'd be honest with Johnny and level with him because he was a boyhood friend, and Care confessed he was only half-human.
"Not to change the subject," said Care, doing it, "but I heard you say something about handling a problem. I can't wash vehicles forever. When are you going to get busy and nail Maz so I can get this mine going again?"
"I'm working on it right now," said Johnny. He looked at his watch. Another hour and a half to go. And then he'd have an idea whether it would fully work or not. 9. Perhaps because she had been so weak, it was 5 hours and Shirk had not stirred. Johnny had moved his chair in to the foot of the bed and sat there with an air mask on. Patty had tried to come in, but Johnny had blocked her until he could find another mask. Breathe gas could send one into convulsions. So Patty sat now with her back to the wall, cross-legged on the floor, watching Chirk. The cyclo's breathing seemed to be less shallow, or was he just being hopeful?
No, he wasn't.
Chirk had moved a paw. Very slight, but she had moved it. After a long time, Chirk let out a fluttering sigh. She opened her eyes and looked dully about her. She finally focused on Johnny. She simply looked at him for quite a while. Then, abruptly, Chirk hitched herself up on her elbows and said with some authority,
"Johnny, did you send that library form in like I told you? The Home Office is going to be pretty cross if it finds you've got an incomplete set of books down here."
Johnny heaved a sigh of relief. Part of it was for the practical value of this. Part of it was for Chirk herself. He was about to answer when she caught sight of her arms. Puzzled, she said,
"What am I doing so thin?"
She hitched herself up a little higher.
"Why am I so weak?"
"You'll feel stronger when you've had something solid to eat. We have some very good goo food now, and even some chew roots." Her interest was immediate and then faded.